I'm Ivy.
I'm Rachel, and we are Swords and Sapphics, a podcast all about representation, queer media, women with a capital W, and a little bit of nonsense.
So start sharpening your swords, sip your tea, and join us as we obsess over the wonderful beings that are women.
Hello.
Hello. It's been a while.
After a little teeny tiny break.
Just a little one.
Yeah. We've been sick, busy, working, and sick again.
Yeah, and most of all, neurodivergent.
We wish to do all the time.
Which is why we're going to start putting it out every other week, every other Wednesday.
Yeah.
For our own peace of mind. Because clearly we thought, you know, when we started in the new year, we had so many episodes recorded and we were ready to go.
Yeah, and month passed and we had nothing.
Yeah.
In the last episode, you mentioned we're going to talk about Killing Eve books. We did not finish the second. We read the first chapter of the second one and that's where we ended. So we will not be talking about that today.
No, we're still a work in progress on the Killing Eve books.
Yeah, look, it's written by a man, so I feel you understand.
We're trying. We'll keep at it.
Yeah.
But we have other things to talk about.
Oh yeah.
Like for instance, how Netflix has wronged us in so many fucking ways.
Hmm. they fed us and then they killed everyone we ever loved.
Yeah, we're talking about Shadow and Bone, by the way.
Yeah. Season 2. Yay.
Season 2, just for some context. Shadow and Bone Season 2 came out. We are big fans of the books and we weren't happy and we're going to talk about why soon.
Yeah. And this is coming from someone, we rewatched the first season.
Yeah.
I rewatched it several times. Then we started rewatching together. Because just how much we loved it, even with all the changes. And now here we are. Heartbroken.
We were betrayed once again.
Once again, Netflix owes us therapy.
Yeah. It's nothing new, thing. Nothing changed.
Before we get into that, prepared a sort of new segment, and each episode we will start by talking about a woman in history that you might not know about.
I definitely wouldn't know about it. Ivy's been doing this on her own, so she's gonna educate me.
And I'm excited because especially during like the International Women's Day, there's I learned a lot of new names, and it's really exciting. So let's
We should call it Educating Rachel.
It's really educating everyone, like including myself. Unsurprisingly, there are a lot of women, and also, of course, specifically women of color forgotten in history, thanks to which we have now things that we don't even know about, like. You often hear like, "Well, you wouldn't have anything without man. We invented everything." Oh shit! So the first woman I'd like to mention is Hedy Lamarr, the inventor of the tech behind Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, and GPS. She was also a film star during Hollywood's golden age. So not only she was an actress, but also inventor. Yeah. She lived in 1914 to 2000s. And thanks to her, we can connect now. Thanks to her, we even know each other.
She invented
technology behind Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, and GPS.
Oh, amazing.
Acting her ass off.
They say women don't know how to use directions. We invented GPS, bitches.
Yeah, it's amazing just how many women we should be grateful for little things like fucking GPS. I cannot walk outside without it. I'm like a goldfish. I go to the new place and I don't know how to get home.
I can't believe people used to use paper maps.
Insane. Maps. I know.
To like figure out where you were on the map. And then hope that you were following the right line on the map. It's just fucked up. I couldn't imagine it.
I'm the person that holds the phone and like turns into a circle on the street to figure out which way the little pointer is pointing. So I know which way to go.
Yeah. Me and my mum went to Amsterdam and I was the designated Google map reader. So most of the time I spent looking down at my Google maps, making sure we were going the right way because my mum is useless at stuff like that. But yeah. I couldn't imagine going on a trip like and not having that.
Yeah.
It's like the only thing that keeps you safe.
I remember when we were going on trips at, like around the Republic and my dad had the thick ass map book behind his seat. It was always give me the map and I had to pull it out or my brother and give it to him or preferably like even find the page that we needed to the our surroundings. It's wild. I love GPS.
I know. Thank you.
Yeah.
To that lady.
Hedy Lamarr.
Hedy Lamarr. Thank you.
Well, what have you been reading? You did a lot of reading recently.
Did I? I didn't do a lot of anything recently.
Yeah.
The last book I read was Someone Else's Horror Story by Rebecca Crandon. It is a short horror novella. 26 pages, I think it is. So it took like less than half an hour to read. We was talking about her other novella.
Oh yeah.
Fire at My Fingertips the other week. This one is centered around a guy who's kind of living on his dad's old farm, and this like younger boy appears and he has to like get him home because it looks like he's in trouble, but there's a twist and it's very gothic-y. The house becomes like a character in the book, which is always I always love that trope in like the horror genre when the house becomes a living thing. And read the rest to find out. It kind of explores themes of like claustrophobia and being trapped, and really would recommend. I feel like we can all relate to that after lockdown and stuff. It was very apt post lockdown. Yeah, it was very vibey, very good. Rebecca Crandon always knows how to get like the right notes and the right theme and the right vibe. So if you have a spare half an hour or hour, I would recommend.
Wonderful. And it's on KU, so isn't it?
It is on. Yeah. No, it's not. Isn't it's actually this one isn't, but it's only like 80p.
Okay.
In the UK. Like it's very, very affordable and very worth it. Especially if you're trying to boost your Goodreads numbers because she does do some great short stories.
Wonderful.
What else? Oh, Finnish Legends and Lattes by Travis Baldry. Very good, very cozy. We've talked about it before. I love cozy fantasy. If I had one thing, I wish there was a little bit more focus on the romance because it was very cute and very sapphic. But yeah, it still had that third act conflict, which I love very much. Mm-hmm. But for those who don't know, it's about an orc who retires from like being a mercenary, is that how you say it?
Mercenary.
And she opens up a coffee shop in a little fantasy town, and it's got lots of family and just cozy vibes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that was that. And that's really it. That at the minute I'm reading His Dark Reflection by Marvelous Michael Anson. So I'm reading this for indie the spring in Hayley Anderton's spring indie event next month. For those who didn't see, we did one back, an advent calendar for indie authors back in December, and every day there's a new discount from a different author, a different book, lots of different genres. There are freebies in there. You can get some free copies, giveaways, things like that. So it's worth keeping an eye out. We're going to be posting more about it on our website. It's worth checking out if you like books by indie authors. I'm a part of it also. I'll have my poetry collection. What's it called?
I forgot how it's named. Yeah.
While the rest of the world dances. Under my pen name, Bryony Rosehurst. That will be free for a couple of days, and also there'll be discounts on holding on to Bluebell Lodge, which is a cozy sapphic novella. But yeah, there'll be more about it on our page. Follow Hayley Anderton for more about it, because she's the host, she's done everything, and she's also a really great author. That was a lot to say. I talked a lot there. I hope some of it made sense.
It did, all of it.
What have you been reading?
Gosh, I've been reading a lot. I wasn't really. It's a lie. I've been reading Bergman Brothers series by Chloe Liese. It's romance books. All of them have different specific representations in each book. Mm. There is from like a lot of autistic people, and each of them is on a different place on the spectrum, which is extremely exciting and interesting to see. There was a book with the second one where the main character has some chronic illness where she uses a cane.
Just need to say, chronic illness really is...
I'm trying to figure out what it was, because I forgot.
No, it's chronic illness. So saying chronic illness makes it sound like a whole saga, and that's, I really like, I wish it was called chronic illness now. The different words. Look,
I was expecting something to come out of my mouth that makes no sense because of my current sleeping schedule. So here we go. I covered it very quickly.
The Chronicles of Illness. Oh, the Illness Chronicles. I'm going to write a book about it.
Yeah, that's really, yeah. Right, the second book is about autistic women living with arthritis and chronic pain. And there is zero toxic masculinity. All of the men are very self-aware, and it's really great. It's really refreshing to see. And then I start reading Hellbend by Leigh Bardugo. It's the second book after Ninth House. And I'm loving it, but my brain doesn't allow me to read right now, so we'll see.
Yeah, it's not easy, lads. What about watching? What are you watching?
So I've started rewatching Resilient Isles, my most favorite crime show in the world. It's so good. For those who don't know, it's about Jane Rizzoli, who is a detective in the Boston PD, and Maura Iles, who is the chief medical examiner. They're extremely queer. I will forever be upset about them not ending up together. That will be my villain origin story. Maura is a genius who is very clearly autistic. So it's really upsetting me that she goes and profiles the killers and serial killers without knowing very clearly that she's autistic, and even her mom is a genius, and they're just like chatting, and she never mentioned, and Jane is sarcastic queen, so I love her very much.
Ivy said to me, you know how you just burst into song as your special autism trait? And Rizzoli, what does she do? Just announces random facts.
Yeah, Maura, the other Isles. Yeah. She just starts talking about like this very niche fact, like scientific ones or psychological ones, and every time Jen is like, "Oh my god, I knew that," and Maura is like, "Oh really?" When it's very clear that Jane is being sarcastic, and Maura is so excited about it. Well, they know each other for like 5 years, And she still like buys everything she says.
I can't relate to that.
Yeah, it never happened to us.
Never happened to us. Yeah.
Yeah, otherwise it's really, really phenomenal show. It's really great. It's on Amazon Prime right now, and I cannot recommend it enough.
Beautiful. I want to watch it, but like I get very bored very quickly of the same format each episode in a crime show where like the crime occurs, and then like I need stakes that go into each episode. I need like more. My brain isn't made for like the same plot every episode, even though it's different circumstances.
Yeah.
I need more. Yes. Because the focus isn't on them, it's on the killer and the victim, and I'm a simple woman. I need more drama than that.
Yeah, I feel like Rizzoli and Isles have more drama than Castle or Mentalist. Even like with Mentalist, like he is trying to get like find out who Red John is, who murdered his wife and a baby girl. With Rizzoli and Isles, there is because it's about these two best friends and it's about like their relationship a lot and Jane's family, and Maura is adopted and then she finds out who her father is and who her parents are, and her dad is not a good person, and so there is a big storyline with that too that also like stretches throughout several seasons, and a lot of the cases are personal, so like sometimes their friend dies. Yeah, it's just really good. I love the show so much, I cannot stress it enough.
Anything else?
Oh, Ted Lasso is back.
Ted Lasso is back.
Yeah, only two episodes so far. But
yeah. Now I can look at Jason Sudeikis without thinking about all the drama with Olivia Wilde, and didn't he like she run him over with, I don't know, somebody ran someone over with the car or something. I don't know if I can know.
It was wild. What can we say?
I can't remember the details, yeah. But I do know that he's just another fucking actor who went off the rails with his wife. And the same thing with Friends. Like, I now can't watch Friends without thinking about Matthew Perry being an absolute weirdo, man.
You reminded me. I saw Cole Sprouse played Ross's son, right? And he was on that weird-ass podcast. And someone said he just stayed in character as Ross's son, and this is how Ross's kid will grow up to be.
True. Yeah.
And you would love it.
Oh, God. Being on that show clearly did things to him.
Yeah. As he said, most of us go into the yards because we're pretty fucked up.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, at that age, you don't even have a choice. Like, that was clearly the decision of the
That's why it's parent. So fucking funny.
I know. Oh, God. Why would you wish to create a monster? Like, I didn't even want my sisters to go into dancing, because when I was in dancing at that age, that was also fucked up. Yeah. Well, speaking of, I've been watching a lot of Friends because I was not well for a whole week. This type of not well where you literally can do nothing but hope you don't die. So you just have to sit on the couch and whatever's on telly is on telly, and that's that. And it was usually Friends. I watched a lot of movies. I watched, what's it called? Shotgun Wedding with Josh Duhamel. I don't know how you say his name, but he's the fit one. And J-Lo, Jennifer Lopez. And I saw that it had really bad ratings. And you told me why. That she, like, what did she say?
Yeah, she was really, like, pretentious about how people don't enjoy, like, proper movies. That they go to watch MCU rather than actual movie. And then she's basically doing the one movie all over again.
But, she's given me many a good rom-com. I can't lie. And this one was, I really liked it. I'm a sucker for action comedy, like when the characters are sucked into some very dangerous thing that they weren't prepared for, and that's what this was. I don't know about the representation there. Like, I didn't look into it, but they were on an island in the Philippines and there were pirates. So, like, the Filipino rep was just pirates. And I can't imagine that was a good way of representing another culture. But if you just, like, take that away, I really enjoyed it. It was about, they was getting married and then they kind of, like, she realized she didn't want a big wedding and they had, like, an argument. And then, of course, as they were arguing, the pirates came and took their whole wedding party hostage. Oh, Lenny Kravitz was there. I love him.
Yeah.
Made me miss Hunger Games.
Yeah.
Oh, and what's she called? Darcy.
Oh, yeah. From the Good Play. Arden. Darcy Arden, I think.
I don't know. I always forget her name. Yeah. It was just very funny. It was very funny. It was needed when I was ill.
Beautiful. Carden. Darcy Carden. Yeah.
That's the one. I also watched, I think it was called My Perfect Addiction, and I'm 90% sure that they've taken it from a Wattpad story. I don't know, like, where it's come from, this one. I'm ashamed, but I liked it. Really bad voiceover the whole time. Like, she never stopped voicing over. And I was like, girlie, just let me into the scene. Stop telling me what's going to happen and just, like, show me. But it was fine. Like, she was an MMA mixed martial arts fighter. And so was he. And she was trying to get revenge on her ex by, like, training up his opponent, and it had all the good Wattpad tropes that we all miss. It was like, but it was Ross Butler though, and we all love a bit of Ross Butler, let's be honest.
Mm-hmm.
He's a very beautiful man. He had tattoos. Now, it had the, like, stereotypical, oh, I'm gonna leave you now because I'm not good enough for you. I have a fucked up past. Shit like that. It was great. I'm such a slut for that. Like, I'm never not gonna be. When I read it, I'm like, God, this is awful. But when I watch it, I'm like, fuck yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. I'm sure there's some, like, problematic thing behind it, an author or whatever, but I'm choosing not to.
There always is, yeah.
I'm choosing not to look into it too deeply because I just wanted to watch a really shit film, and I did, and it was glorious.
Wonderful.
I didn't say that I've been obsessed with The Walking Dead.
Oh, yeah, you didn't. Go for it.
I didn't talk about that, mostly because I'm not sure how to. I love it when men are in pain, and this is all this is men in pain. I did not think that I would fall in love with Daryl Dixon because I've seen many a picture of him with that greasy ass hair.
Yeah.
Look, it happens to us all. He comes for all of us.
To bitch about Loki and his greasy hair, especially when Bucky has the same fucking hairstyle. Also extremely greasy. Honestly.
Because the Norse god should have shampoo. We've established this before. He's in the apocalypse. Daryl is in the apocalypse, so he has an excuse.
Okay.
Plus, there's usually so much blood in it that you don't even see how much it needs a wash anyways.
Great.
It's great. He walks around carrying a crossbow. I don't know what more you would want from a man, honestly.
Valid.
Yeah. That's all I have to say about that.
You'll be prepared next time with, like, points. So we've been watching Shadow and Bone season 2. Just for those who don't know, the season 2 has both Siege and Storm and Rune and Rising, which is the second and third book in the first Grisha trilogy. And it also has, of course, the Six of Crows characters in it. Yeah. I was very worried before the show came out in the first play of how they would connect it. They did it perfectly in season 1. And now I'm worried. Now
we even got Kaz and the Darkling, who never interact in the books, interacting, and it was beautiful. He said, cool. "You should have stayed in Ketterdam, Mr. Brecker." And it was quite gore.
Threw a little smoke bomb at him, which now we know was violence. But with season two, it became extremely clear that the writers preferred writing for Six of Crows. And that Netflix, of course, was a bitch and decided to put them into the main storyline, which makes zero fucking sense as we figure out.
Mm-hmm.
So the first three or four episodes were fucking good. They were phenomenal. Oh, yeah. They were covering Siege and Storm. When they moved to the third book, it became a fucking shit show.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly for the crows. Because what they've done to them, I will never fucking forgive them for that.
No. I feel like for the Shadow and Bone trilogy, it's a pretty, well, I say this, but then they did fuck that one up as well. Like, it's a pretty straightforward story that it does mirror a lot of other YA books. So it would be really hard to, like, veer off so much that it would fuck everything up.
Mm-hmm.
They did do that.
Yeah, in the last which episode. Says a lot.
But, like...
I'm going to jump in. First of all, they turned us into Melina fucking shippers.
In the books, Mal is a soggy, wet piece of lettuce.
Yeah.
No, not even lettuce. Lettuce should be soggy and wet. He's a soggy piece of bread. He doesn't understand Alina's powers. Like, he doesn't want her to have them. It's very clear he doesn't like the dynamic where she's the one with the power and he's just a human guy.
Yeah.
He's just a guy who's there.
So he just... is become a blade.
Yeah, but in the show he has become a really good love interest.
Really good. He was hot. He was supportive. He was the one who pushed Alina to embrace her powers.
Yeah.
I was shocked.
It was great. Archie Renault. I don't know how you say his name.
Renault.
Poo boy.
It's very clear. It's very clear why I see him getting bigger roles now.
Oh yeah. After the first season, when he was announcing all these new roles that he'd got, I was like, I didn't foresee that he would be the one with getting the most success from this show. But now I get it. Now I really, really get it.
Which also, in the second season, I feel especially the crows sort of, they love the characters at the beginning, but I feel now they managed to sort of understand it from a different, level, and they acted their fucking asses off.
Fucking hell. They did.
Yeah.
In the first season, they were acting, and it was very clear they were acting.
Yes.
In the second season, Kaz was Kaz. Freddie was Kaz Brekker. He was going to kill everybody. And I was going to watch. I was going to support that. It was so good. They really got their acts together in this season, literally.
Yeah.
The characters that we were waiting for.
Mm-hmm.
But at what cost?
At what cost? So I'm going to. Okay. Feel free to jump into it. I'm going to start my rant. First of all, they told us all of their traumatic backstories right off the gate, especially with Kaz. Kaz isn't a sharer. He's patient when it comes to his revenges. So when he was planning his revenge on Pekka Rollins, it took two fucking books for clear reasons, and that's how the duology ended with him having his revenge. Now it wasn't before they even got to anything else. That was the first few episodes. And now the entire group knows about it, which again just doesn't make sense. Then we have Inesh, which just breaks my heart. In the book, her family was abducted by traitors, slavers. And that's how she came to Ketterdam and was part of the menagerie, which is a brothel. So her goal was not only to find her family, but hunt the captains, the slavers, and the slave trade, basically. In the show, her entire goal was to find her brother. That was it. She did it before in 10 minutes.
And also, in the books, she didn't have the ability to do that because she was Kaz's investment. He got her out of the menagerie so she could help him with his heists,
yes,
with his schemes. So she couldn't go anywhere. And then in the end, their relationship developed over fucking time, over a very careful time that Leigh Bardugo took to flesh out this relationship and these characters, so that in the end she could then go on the journey to, like, whatever she was doing to, like, hunt down the slavers and stop it all from happening. But they rushed it.
Yeah.
They rushed Kaz and Inej's relationship. He didn't even say, "I protect my investments," which is the best line from the book, man.
Fucking hell. Also, like, I don't see good enough reason for Inej to come back to Ketterdam for her to stay true to the character she was in the books. Because now she left. I just honestly don't see how she would come back for the big heist into the Ice Court. And her relationship with Kaz, because Kaz is such a complicated person, was extremely layered. And it was mostly the little moments.
Yeah.
And yeah, they rushed it and we didn't see like 90% of them. And we got the final thing where she said, like, "I will have you without an armor, Kaspar, or I will not have you at all." Where he was like, "Stay and catch them." Like, you could see it from his little glances that he's clearly in love with her. But like, there was so much more to it. So much more. And now we won't get that.
No. That's the thing. By rushing it to the end of the two books, they have taken away so much from the middle of the books that we can't get now, because it wouldn't make sense in the storyline, because what happens at the end has already happened.
Also,
so they've closed off.
Jessamy Lee and Ben Barnes and Archie Renault deserves to have, they're the main faces of the show. They were on the posters. It deserved to be about them. It wasn't.
No.
It wasn't. It was mostly about the crows. Like, there was a whole episode with them being in Shuhan trying to get some sword. Also, by the way, taken away from, like, Alina's power of being able to kill the Metazos, just to give them a storyline. Because in the books, she was capable of doing that on her own.
It's just, it's a shit show, man. Like, they did... There was some parts that are fine. Like, the way they've introduced Nikolai and set up his character is really great. Like, the same with Zoya. But that was the weird thing. They seem to be focusing more on characters who come into the series after. Like, they did a really good job of setting them up.
Like, but Zoya was a big part of the books. She was barely even there.
Yeah. And that's, like, she'll only be put there for the purpose of, like, the relationship with Nikolai now.
Yeah.
That much is clear, because she was a big part of, like, Alina's story as well. But they didn't put her in there properly.
And of the plot, because, like, there is a reason why she became the general, and she had also a complicated relationship with the Darkling.
Yeah.
And she's an extremely complicated person, too. Jesper and Violet, like, what the hell? We got them into a relationship like 3 seconds after they met, because they already clearly slept together. Even though, again, their relationship progressed, and that was the beauty in it. Like, even the fucking line, it was clear that since the first season, when Jesper like fucked the stable boy, they were really trying to push, like, look, we have a queer character card. When Jesper is much more complicated, first of all, with his addictions, which they also skipped over, because he is Grisha, and he wasn't using his power, and because of it, because he was, like, sort of controlling himself in that sense, he had several addictions. Like, he was a gambler, he was constantly in debt. That was also a big part of his storyline, and also he was, like, a slut.
But Wylan was not set up that way. Like, he was very meek and quiet and whatever. And, like, that isn't the same character that would sleep with a stranger.
Yeah.
Like, I love a good one-night stand. And, like, but if it doesn't match up with the character and who they are, then what's the point? Like, there was just no reason to have rushed that so quickly. It did feel like
because they knew that a lot of readers are there for the queer characters, that they were like, we're just going to shove them together now.
Yeah.
Well, that isn't a good way of approaching a relationship, whether it's queer or not. So it just ends up taking away from what we wanted.
Zhenya and David. I mean,
oh my God,
don't even.
Come the fuck on.
First of all, Zhenya in general, her character goes through so much in the books. Like, before even the books begin, she's been sexually assaulted, raped by the king. Like, she's been she's put in that position by the Darkling. Like, he sends her to the king, or he sends the king to her, or whatever. And then she's, like, held hostage by the Darkling, and she's mutilated by the Darkling's creatures, the Volcra and things like that. And that happened in the show as well. But then by the time that it had finished, David was presumed dead, which doesn't happen for a few more books in the books. And they were... when they went to burn the Darkling, they were like, do it for David, to Zhenya, who has been like sexually assaulted and mutilated by this man. Do it also, for yourself. Never mind fucking David.
Once again, Hollywood really is pushing the pretty card, because in the books, I remember her, like, half of her body was mutilated, even like her face. And they did it very, like, pretty aesthetic way.
Mm-hmm.
When the entire point of it was her losing that power, which were her looks. Yeah.
Because she's a tailor as well.
Yeah.
So she's used to being able to make things beautiful. Mm-hmm. And the Darkling took that away from her. And that's the point of his evil as well, that he would be that fucking evil, that he would mutilate someone and she can't tailor it away.
Yeah.
Like, she can't get herself back.
Her armor. The only armor she had.
She has this quote that's where she's like, I'm not ruined, because she sees herself as a ruined person afterwards. Mm-hmm. And she says, I am ruination. And that's one of the most powerful lines in the book. And they fucking skipped it. They left it out.
Yeah.
In the main fight scene, she went and hid.
Uh-huh.
Because David made her go and hide. So she didn't, even that was taken from her. Her ability to fight back after what had happened to her, her mm-hmm. own agency. They took that away and made it about David's death.
Also, you have a powerhouse that is Daisy, and you don't use her to something great? Yeah. Like, come the fuck on.
So her whole storyline is just how she's sad and she's grieving, and she never gets that ability to fight back the way she does in the books. Mm-hmm. Like, she never gets her agency back. She just becomes a very traumatized person who can't do anything to fight back against it. Because by the time she comes out, the Darkling's dead.
Yeah, even the king. Like, I feel like she said it to the king, didn't she, though?
I can't remember.
Line. I don't know.
Yeah.
I feel like there was some confrontation with the king, though, or the queen. That was a bigger confrontation. Like, here, the queen confronted her, but Nikolai came in to save her from his mother. Like,
and then Nikolai got to be the hero because he stood up for Zhenya.
Yeah.
But when does Zhenya stand up for herself? Like, she doesn't get the opportunity, and that's what really pissed me off.
She has amazing character development in the books. Like, it's fucking phenomenal. Yeah. Like, her journey of healing itself. Like, she didn't get the opportunity here because we saw nothing. And then in the last episode, she was, like, lying on the couch laughing her fucking ass off.
Yeah, she was just enjoying life with her besties in the palace.
Yeah.
Like, as if David hasn't just died prematurely. I don't know if he's dead or not, because we never got the body. We never saw him die, which was another fucking thing that didn't make any sense.
Yeah. I know in the books, when he died in Rule of Wolves, which was after they had some time together, which they fucking deserved. And I feel like they didn't find his body either. Because, but it was still like, it was very different, like, very different in the tone of it, in with her relationship with him. Like, fucking hell. He was also a big part of, like, creating new Hrafga. Like, he was one of the Nikolai's advisors. Like, he was a big part of King of Scars.
Yeah. And I can't imagine how rushed it must have seemed to people who aren't readers, because we survived off crumbs of Jenya and David in the first season. Like, it was hinted that they liked each other and that was it. And then suddenly, like, in one season, they got together, like, during her trauma as well. And, like, it wouldn't have made sense for me if I hadn't have read the books that they were together. Like, I can't imagine how that must have come across.
Especially with her finding the his plans for the engagement ring. Like, very quickly. It was like, and it was a matter of, like, a few days.
Yeah, he was going to propose to her. Like, it was just, they didn't take the time. And they've just ruined so much about it. I don't understand why.
Yeah.
If they didn't have the time for that storyline, then don't put it in.
Mm-hmm.
Like, don't do things half-assed.
I feel like, considering, like, what Netflix is posting on Twitter, it's clear that they try to fed us the ships instead of the actual plot and the character development. Right.
Oh, and also, we need to talk about the fucking weird glance between Inej and Talia.
He was ace in the books.
Or was he?
I feel like, I don't remember him being with anyone that I know for sure, and he was related to poetry. And he was never interested in anyone, so I would agree with that statement.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So what's the reason? Especially, like, it was right after Inej said the big line to fucking and then she gets into the boat like, hello, sir. Like, I get it, you're hot, but come the fuck on.
I know, like, she's been pining for Kaz Brekker for 2 seasons, and you're really going to do him dirty like that, and also the way it comes across is like, well, you have trauma, so I don't have time for you, so I'm going to go and ogle this other guy.
Yeah.
Whereas in the books, Inej also had the trauma of not wanting to be touched, because she was in the menagerie as well. Like, she also has sexual trauma.
Which is also another reason why there has to be more time. Like, she comes out of menagerie after she's been, like, abused and raped, basically, and goes right to tell, like, Kaz, if you cannot touch me, then I don't want you.
Yeah.
Like, that makes zero that I forgot about that part, and now I'm all new upset.
No, and it's one of the first things that I thought of, like, because in the books it makes sense, because they're both trying to heal, but he won't let her in. Mm-hmm. It's not about him physically touching her, it's about all the mental trauma that he has as well, and the fact that she's willing to let him in, whether it's emotionally or physically, and he can't.
Mm-hmm.
But in the show, they've reduced it down to the fact that he has to wear gloves and he can't be touched skin on skin. Like, despite the fact that he bound her wound for her when she was hurt. Like, the fact he was already showing signs that he could do it for her if he kept trying. But it was like she gave up on him.
Yeah. Very much so.
And that really, because Kaz Brekker deserves better than that.
In the two books, like, you can clearly see that he's mostly, like, pushing her out emotionally. Like, he's not admitting his feelings. She's like, say you're sorry. And he's like, I just protect my investment. Like, that's... Especially when she thinks he won't come for her when she's got kidnapped.
Yeah.
That's another
thing we won't get.
Yeah. Maybe, yeah. Because it was a villain's dad. So the storyline is still this.
Yeah.
Surprised, but, like, still, it makes, now she knows that he wants her to say that he loves her, but in the books she didn't, that was before, and she didn't believe he will get her, because she didn't know that he had such big feelings for her.
they've really fucking ruined it, and I'm so upset about it.
I know.
If I was Leigh Bardugo, I would be so upset that they've taken, like, all of that amazing material and just reduced it to something that's a less than, like, especially with the characters. Like, she took so much time building those characters for Six of Crows, especially. Like, for me, they were a lot more well-rounded than in Shadow and Bone, and the story just in general was better. Also, Matthias was in Hellgate the whole season. His only scenes were him fighting people and missing Nina.
They missed out, like, the complicated feelings he had for Nina. Like, he said that she's dead to him or something like that. But it was more than that. Like, his dreams were shifting from being with her romantically and trying to kill her. That's how intensely complicated these feelings were, because he was forced to fight the wolves. In the show, which two Fjordans are, like, sacred, in the show he sort of controlled them, which was extremely, like, epic, and I loved it. But in the book, it was more complicated because he had to fight the creature that he, like, grew up to think of as sacred, like, that he had his own to have connection with. It's all these little things that they took away that made the character so complex and layered.
Yeah. And also not just that they took it away this season, but they've done it in a way that means the next season we can't get things that we've been looking forward to since the TV show was announced. Like these little moments that mean so much.
Yeah.
It's just, it's so sad.
Let's talk about Alina for a bit, because what the actual fuck?
I have no words with that one. This was the worst thing they could have done.
Yeah. In the books, she was really apprehensive to, like, even pretending to being engaged to Nikolai, if I remember it correctly. I remember her not wanting any attention to her, especially, like, she didn't want to come back to... She just wanted to go back to the orphanage and just live her happy little life.
Mm-hmm.
She continued that in the show. She continues with the fucking engagement. She lets just Mal walk away.
Yeah, after she brought him back from the dead using Verzos.
Yeah. And she used the cut, Darkling's cut. So clearly she's going to have some, like, villain storyline or something.
Yeah.
Which, what the fuck?
How the fuck will she remain as, like, this legendary Sancta Alina when she's using dark powers now? When she's a villain, when she can be a villain, when she's... that's clearly the way they're going to put it. Because if she has the same powers as the dark, then people are not going to want her to be a saint.
Also, one more thing, I'm going to jump a little back. For Darkling, because they also really fucked up his, like, entire... storyline and backstory, which was that he, for hundreds of centuries, he's been hunted and his people were killed, and his only goal was to create a safe world for them. And when he shared the trauma in the big fight, Alina's reaction was like, boo fucking who?
Yeah,
basically.
The whole thing, idea that like calls to like was what connected these two, because they both had these powers that, you know, like, people didn't think they were supposed to have, but they completely, like, ridded the part where Alina understands and empathizes with him despite knowing that he's wrong.
And that's why, and their relationship was much more complicated also, because he said his true name to her when he was dying, because he wanted that to be on his, like, tombstone. And that's why in the last book, in Rule of Wolves, when after he came back to life, he was the one to sacrifice himself into some, I forgot what it specifically was, but into, like, basically suffering for eternity, because he wanted to keep Grisha safe. That was his entire goal. He just went on it differently because of all the trauma.
Yeah.
And that's why even show, Alina came back in the books to see him, because they had this mutual sort of understanding.
In the show, I couldn't even remember why he was even doing all the shit he was doing. Like, it wasn't... He was just a villain and that was it. They just made him into a one-dimensional villain. Like, he didn't have a reason... They didn't remind us of all the reasons he was doing it.
Mm-hmm.
It was just he's just a bad man.
Yeah, basically. And even Lee fucking Bardugo said that you cannot have your Deparem, which is the plot of the Six of Crows duology, with Darkling there, and now they basically put Alina into Darkling's place, which then makes zero fucking sense. Because he would protect, of course, he will protect Grisha from the effects of Yordapara.
Yeah. It just is like, I don't understand what the reason is for any of it.
Yeah. Nothing makes sense anymore.
And anyways, it will probably be cancelled because we got because a sapphic couple.
We have sapphic couple, yeah.
And we know that Netflix doesn't like to keep...
What?
Also, they tweeted, like, the two pictures of the whole two interactions that they had. And they were like, we want what Tamar and Nadia have. Like, why don't you let Sapphic people have that, first of all? And you canceled all of them. Second of all, they had, like, three interactions. They were supposed to get married in the next book. So, like, make it make sense.
Yeah. That's the thing, like, they're just using queer relationships and identities as, like, a crutch to get, like, to keep the readers there. Because they know that they're going so far off track that we're not happy.
Yeah.
But it's just a shame. It really is. And Ben Barnes said something like in that interview, who's like, we had to cut out a lot of stuff. Like, we have stuff to do or something like that. Like, as if all the intricate details that Leah Bardugo put into the show was, I mean, to the books, was like shit that you could just wipe away and it doesn't matter.
No, it was, to me, it was, like, clear he wasn't very excited about the changes, too, because he exactly mentioned, like, Alina's apprehension to her sudden popularity, and now here she's completely different. Mm-hmm. And the creator, Eric Heisen something, I forgot what his name is, he basically said, like, Lee was a little skeptical about some of the changes. And, like, but it was, again, the Netflix that pushed it.
Mm-hmm.
That's they're just fucking, they all they give a fuck is about fucking money, like,
yeah,
that's so
someone was theorizing that, like, the reason they've cut everything so short is because Ben Barnes would be well within his right to demand a bigger paycheck next season otherwise. Mm-hmm. And you just, like, it's easy to believe that could be the case, like. And if Archie is also getting those jobs, mm-hmm. like, he's also well within his right to request more money. And they've been, like, in the top 10 for weeks now. So there's absolutely no way they're not earning their dues for the show.
They've been top one worldwide for the first, like, 4 days after the show came out. Like, worldwide.
So if it is cancelled, then you know why. Because there's no way that they're not, like, earning enough from viewers the success that it has.
Especially when they started with merch. Now they started, like, selling keftas and bags and t-shirts and stuff. So
what's the saddest about it, though, is the way that the actors so clearly care for these characters and for each other. Like, their chemistry in interviews is, like, it's just unmatched. It is a match. Like, I've never seen a cast that close. Like, the way they joke with each other, the way they're comfortable with each other, the way they talk about each other. Like, Callahan and Danielle are everything to me.
Before the second season came out, this is what we said. Like, one of the reasons why the show is so good is, even though they went a little bit off of the storyline the first season, was because the chemistry the characters have off screen is shining through the cameras. Like, you can tell that even though they're in a character, they have this, and it comes down to, like, love and respect, because it's very much like you as if you could touch it, like, you can very clearly see it. And I've never seen a cast like this.
Because, like, it's fair to say they're not, like, necessarily the bestest actors on the planet, especially in the first season. Like, they were finding their feet. It wasn't necessarily like we were being immersed in that world, because there was, like, awkward parts of dialogue that they just weren't getting into character with. But it didn't matter, because there was so much love and care taken from the books and put into the show.
Especially because they all came from a little indie world, so they didn't have the experience with like big production that is Netflix, that they built the entire set of like Ketterdam was built. It was, there was barely CGI there. It was like built. So yeah.
Yeah.
It would just be a shame to watch it sink because of a big corporation, like everything else in the world. But it's looking like it's going that way. They've already started fucking it up, and I don't know how they're gonna like keep readers wanting to watch it, because they're not committed to the source material anymore.
Even I feel like in the last book, when Nikolai was sort of taken by the Volkra, not Metazos, but Volkra, Zoya was the one to like help him. That's where they sort of like hit it off here. And in the show, she like was very clearly into him immediately. Again, their relationship is more complicated than that.
Yeah, she has that line in the show where she's like, I could fix him.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, it was good because it was hinting towards obviously what we all know is going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But like, at the same time, they're just...
Honestly, they're
focusing... Yeah. They seem to be focusing their energy in the wrong way. Not even in the wrong places, but in the wrong way. Like with Jesper and Weiland. If you could take time to make them sleep together and give them a one-night stand backstory, you can take time to flesh out their relationship properly.
Yeah.
Like, it's just sad. It's sad to see.
Mm-hmm. I don't have high hopes anymore. I have no hopes. No longer.
Yeah, we were a bit defeated after we finished it. I didn't even want to rewatch it, which is very sad. Like,
yeah.
That's the most painful thing. We got so much in the first half of the season, and other people was already criticizing it at that point, and we were like, what? Like, this is so good. Like, it's exactly what we wanted. And then it just went downhill, and that's like the saddest thing. We were so close to getting everything, and it was ripped away.
Exactly. That's why it sort of hurt so much, because the season started so promising. Like, the hype that I felt, I didn't feel in a very long time. Like, the excitement, just and the giddiness for getting all of it. And then it just went.
It just went.
Especially, I'm going to add just quickly, because for Crows, instead of them being in the main storyline, they could have just, well, very well go for Matthias. But
yeah, that was the whole point of the books. Like, getting Matthias back was the first priority in the books.
Yeah.
They did the heists well. They always do the heists really well, but they're not staying true to the characters' motives.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how are they gonna become the Six of Crows now when, like, Inej is gone? Like, Kaz is, like, not as hard as he was in the books. Like, Nina was the one focused on getting Matthias back on her own.
And Nina's and Inej's relationship also progressed throughout years, and their friendship was, like, also very important. And they barely interacted.
Well, that was another weird thing as well. Like, they focused on Nina and Zoya being friends, which I loved. But, like, it wasn't supposed to be about them at that point in time. It was supposed to be about the Crows.
Mm-hmm.
And they even threw in that joke where Jesper was like, we should write a book, and we'll call it The Five of... And then it, like, transitioned to another scene because we all knew it was going to say Crows. But how can you make that fucking joke when they're not being the Crows? They're like taken away from the Crows.
Mm-hmm.
It's just so absurd, man.
Mm-hmm.
I do feel like we should talk about Pekka Rollins for a minute. He is. I would let that man ruin me.
Oh, boy, can fucking get it. Like, I feel like we're being very strongly gaslit. Like, with the fucking Scottish accent, because after all, we are very simple women, and there is just something about ruthless men, especially with a Scottish fucking accent.
I know, and a fucking beard. I needed to talk about the accents. They don't make any sense in the position of the world that they're in. Like, I was under the impression that, like, Kirsch and Kestam was, like, Holland, Netherlands type place. And then Fjordins are like Norway, Nordic countries. And then Ravka is Russia.
Mm-hmm.
And shit like that. And then there's just a random Scottish man walking around. Like, and they give like, they give the characters random accents sometimes. And like in the last season, there were Russian accents. And it just did, like, it didn't make any sense.
It makes zero fucking sense for them not to be able to pronounce their own fucking name. And you know where I'm going with it, because I'm upset. So, bitches, for everyone, the name Ivan, coming from a fucking Russian, is not pronounced Ivan. It never was, and it never should, and it never won't be. So in the first season, when there was a fucking character called Ivan, only one character called him so. Everybody was like, Ivan, bitch, no. No.
Yeah. And she knows her name is Ivana.
Yeah. See, it's so easy to pronounce it properly, isn't it? I'm so proud.
I did it. Thank you. Yeah.
Because for all of you who don't hear the difference, if it's pronounced Ivana, and English people pronounce it Ivana. You have it with fucking Ivanka Trump, which again, Ivanka, and they're like, Ivanka. No! No!
That's how we were always, well, that's how I thought it was pronounced, Ivana. And then, of course, Ivana set me straight.
Yes. It's just really upsetting. Like, if I were to pronounce your name the way I would pronounce it in my language, it would be Rachel, as we've established. Mm-hmm. That's not your name. I would not ever call you that.
Well, you do sometimes.
Yeah, I do sometimes. Because sometimes I'm in trouble. I need to... If I call her, like, Rachel here and there, it's too soft. Like, it doesn't have the sort of punchy feeling that I need for her to understand that what she did was wrong.
By the way, what she's referring to is me dying on Fortnite or setting somebody on fire by accident.
Not somebody, me. So when I'm upset, I have to say Rachel, because the H punches it the way I needed it to punch.
Yeah, and I quite like it, I have to say.
Good, so that's great. Anyway, yeah.
Do you have any tea?
I don't think I do. I feel because I'm just not, the only TikToks I see are with girls from Call of Duty. Oh, wait. Holy fucking shit. I do have tea.
Yeah.
Selena Gomez and Hailey fucking Bieber are at it. Well, Hailey is at it. So basically, she just starting being snarky on TikTok and Instagram and making fun of Selena very clearly with Kylie Jenner, even though they're like, oh, you're reaching, guys. No. And there was a lot of stuff. I'm not gonna get into it because that's for an hour. But a few days ago, Selena put it on her Insta stories, like, that Hailey reached out to her, that she's getting death threats, which of course is fucking not right. Like, go touch a grass, you guys. But what's... And then Hailey also, like, put something on her stories, like, that she thanks Selena, blah, blah, blah. What strikes me as strange is that they never really addressed the issue, which was, like, Hailey being basically a mean girl and never apologizing for it. And also, this is not the first time that Selena's... That was some sort of, like, drama, and Selena was like, you guys, stop. I don't stand for, like, women tearing each other down and stuff. There was, like, several times. Anyway, it's been going on for the last few weeks. Honestly, like, I sort of want Selena to respond with something snarky. And, like, just you know, I want more of the, like, 2000s Hollywood drama, where, like, Eminem and Christina Aguilera were, like, beefing, you know.
I don't remember that.
Oh, too bad. I remember something.
Even my mum was talking about it. She was like, did you see that Hailey Bieber?
Like, fucking hell, it's reached the masses, man.
Like, first of all, during like one of Justin's concerts, people start chanting that they hate Hailey Bieber, which that's over the line. The same with the death threats, like, fucking hell, stop. That's like, you can enjoy the drama without like being a disgusting piece of shit.
Yeah. You know what, though? I'm really fascinated by the conspiracy theories that Justin and Hailey are from a cult, and that like she was it was an arranged marriage, like they were set up in that church.
Because there's so much behind it, because Hailey was like Selena's fan. Like, she had a fucking magazine with Selena and Justin on it on some fucking red carpet when she was a teenager. And then she's also like extremely Christian, and they were in the same church, where the Hollywood church, like even Chris Pratt is part of. And so there was like something about that she was supposed to be for him first, but they were a little worried because of the age difference. So he was given fucking Catherine Schwarzenegger, and Hailey went to Justin. And look, honestly, with every interview Justin does and talks about Hailey, I feel like he doesn't like her at all. And he never stood up for her during this drama, like, not once. So I just want to be a fly on the walls to know everything, just for the sake of knowing, because I feel there's some extremely interesting shit behind all of it.
Yeah, it's very fascinating. I want to know.
Also, because like Hailey copies Selena constantly, like it's always a matter of days where she wears the same dress. Selena posted a picture of her with the short hair. Hailey cut her hair like 2 days later. There's some. I want to study it. Want to know.
Honestly, I'm so fascinated to see if she has some, like, weird obsession. I only found out when my mum was talking about it that Hailey is one of the Baldwin's daughters. Like, one of the Baldwin brothers' daughters.
Yeah, Alec Baldwin's brother. Yeah, she's his kid.
Crazy. Which is already a red flag, let's be honest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I need to promote myself first.
Yes, do it.
My book is coming out 4th of April, somewhere at the Scottish Castle. It's queer, it's a romance, it's set in Scotland.
Wow, you really know how to fucking sell it. Amazing.
I'm so fucking bored.
The most deadpan voice. A few little facts, honestly. Allow me. So Jasmine is a countess, right? So she goes to Scotland after her divorce, that was like a drama, Hollywood drama, basically. And she pretends to not be the countess after she steps on some flowers. And Meg is like, don't step on my flowers. I forgot the names of them. And of course, they start to be a little flirty, and then they are chasing the owl that runs away, flies away. And then they kiss in the garden and they fall in love, and it's great.
Yeah.
And Mac is a foster dad to a queer teenager, and they're everything to me, and it's just so good. And he's also adopted, if I remember correctly, and it's just very soft.
Thank you.
You see, that's how you do it. Anyway,
Thank you.
For the fourth. Yes. There we go.
My second novel, I'm very excited. It is.
Yeah.
I don't know why I'm so rubbish at talking about
it. It doesn't even sound that you're really excited. She's like, I'm excited. It's really good. Should buy it, I guess.
It's because, like, I'm excited when I'm writing it, and I've written it. It's over for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but is it though?
But the good news is that there is this lesbian girly in it, and I'm currently writing her book. Her name is Gem, and I love her very much.
Quite the gem.
Yeah. Thank you for that.
You're welcome. You're welcome. You see, I'm doing our job for you.
Yeah. And again, don't forget about the spring event, all running all through April. There's a new author, a new book, a new discount, a new freebie every day.
Yes.
See, how come I'm better at talking about that?
I don't know. I have my theories. I'm going to leave them for our therapy sessions. Then feel free to disclose them publicly. And we will be back in 2 weeks now, hopefully. Yeah, yeah. I think we will. We can do that.
Oh, yeah, we can do that. We have things to say. We have conversations to have.
Yeah. Well, we said all we need to say. So don't forget to...
Oh, support women's rights.
But most importantly, let's support women's wrongs unless they fuck up the storyline and character development in your favorite show based on your favorite books. See you later, alligator.
In the wild, crocodile. Thank you for listening to Swords and Sapphics. You can enjoy a new episode every Wednesday.
While waiting, you can visit our website, swordsandsapphics.com, and find lots of articles, interviews, and guest pieces.
Feel free to contact us with any requests, questions, or inquiries through a form on our website or directly to our email, swordsandsapphicspodcast@gmail.com.